you ever get one of those frozen dinners and it tastes like it's just covered in wham sauce?
Oh, whammy!
Don't waste your time on that boo-boo. Keep it a buck. From the creators of House Party 2 and SpaghettiOs comes the latest taste sensation to grace your grocer's freezer. Rigatoni Tony Tony. Frozen pasta delights.
It tastes good. Yeah. It tastes good. Frozen noodles sure taste good.
Rigatoni Tony Tony tastes good. Let me hear you say.
Noodles.
A rigatoni Tony Tony tastes good. Better make you a play.
Noodles.
It tastes good in your mouth. Rigatoni Tony Tony has done it again.
A rigatoni, yeah. A rigatoni, yeah. A rigatoni Tony Tony,
podcast. I go by the name of Miguel Rockwell. As usual, I got my right-hand man on the right-hand side, Mr. Joseph Hawkins, a.k.a. Hawkins Bird. How's it going?
It's going well. It's cool, like, how you just look at me, and then you start laughing right away.
Because it's just funny. You know, yeah, it's funny when it's you see
funny.
Me.
I know. Yeah. We're funny together.
We're just funny together.
Yeah, I know.
It's been that way. We have a special guest with us tonight. You know, we've been talking inside the podcast, in our offices, for quite a while now about getting this lovely lady on, and so she's here tonight to join us, talk about some stuff she's got going on, and we definitely want to get a bunch of her story.
As we do.
Yes, as we always like to do. So, happy to welcome Tiffany Wilson.
Hello.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going good.
Good.
It's going real good.
Word. Well, definitely, yeah, I told you I saw your video the other day. Mm-hmm. You posted about you got a Indiegogo campaign going on right now.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Well, we got to start one.
Yeah. We should start one for
just
ourselves.
It,
but yeah, crowdfunding is the way to go.
It's the way to go.
Yeah, for sure. Pull that mic just a little bit closer. Cool. Tell us real quick, though, what's behind the campaign? Yeah.
Well, me personally, I have been singing for forever, and I've actually been really happy with how I've been doing things. I've released 2 albums now, mm-hmm. and what I've learned, you know, I think we all know the music business. We don't fully understand it sometimes, but bottom line is it takes money, and I've put out 2 albums. They do well,
yeah,
but they just kind of float right around the city, mm-hmm. you know, and it makes it difficult to really go beyond, you know,
right.
the city lines. And so, I just said, you know, might as well go big. You know, what is it going to really take? I actually sat down with Quincy Jones some time ago when he was here for Upstream. So I got a chance to speak to him. And he was saying, you know, just always ask for what you want.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I don't necessarily, I need $100,000.
Yeah.
I mean, just to even kick the ball,
right.
you know, just to get it going. I mean, it just takes money.
For sure.
And I don't really think, I think people think, well, go on a TV show. You know, go on The Voice. Go
right,
on The
right,
What.
Right.
Get on a really cool podcast.
Yeah. Right. yeah. I think this is going to be my moment, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But
yeah, like, that's all
that's
it takes,
it.
Right?
That's all it takes.
yeah,
and it's
right.
like, but I have auditioned. I auditioned for X Factor. I didn't even finish.
Really?
They were like, no, thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even finish the line, really.
There's so
they were
many,
like, no, thank you.
There's so many people
we
that
don't
do
think
those
you're
things.
A good fit.
And it's like, you have to be more a certain kind of personality,
mm-hmm.
too. It's not just solely based on the talent, you know, with those things.
Most of it is not based
right.
on the talent at all. And why? If you can do a little bit, it's a muscle. You can pretty much train people to be, you know, a little better than they were when you found them.
Right.
And then the studio does the rest.
Right.
You know, and so that's what They can bank on Killing Market
like,
you.
You should just like go viral or something. Like, isn't that something?
It's so easy, right?
Isn't that what the kids are doing these days?
Yeah, just viral. I don't know.
You should do that when you leave here tonight.
Yeah.
But so anyway, so you're doing the campaign.
I'm doing the campaign.
To try to raise money to help fund the next album and for promotion, marketing, and touring.
Yeah? Absolutely. And we are scheduled to be going on tour. I mean, like, we're booking it right now, which is even crazier to me because we don't have the money, but we have to
make it happen.
Act as if we do right now. Yeah, we're coming. We'd love to come.
Nice.
We're there.
All right.
So we just will it into existence.
So what's the what do people go to? Where do they go to be a part
of that? The name of the campaign is Hit the Road TIFF.
Okay.
And it's Indiegogo is the platform, so it's Indiegogo/hit the road TIFF. Hit the Road TIFF.
Okay, cool.
And of course, you can also go to my website, TiffanyWilsonMusic.com.
Right, and it's right on there. You can also get the link up there, right?
I'm curious, what made you choose that platform for your crowdfunding? Did you do any research into the other?
Yeah, we actually began to launch a GoFundMe campaign probably 6 months ago or something, when we were just doing $15,000 to cover just the tour.
Right.
And then it was like, well, then what? Then what do? You come back here and you flip through the pictures you took while you're on tour, and then you hope, you know, something will happen. And so I just felt like the biggest thing we could do is just gain the momentum and be able to afford to push and get momentum. And,
right.
So I chose Indiegogo because I saw that it was either tech and music and things like that. But if you didn't raise all of what you got or what you were trying to reach, you still get what you raised.
Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas with like GoFundMe or something, if you don't meet the goal,
you may not get a Kickstarter for sure.
Kickstarter is like if they don't hit the goal, then you don't know.
Yeah. And there was an artist recently, who did that.
Right.
And didn't get it. So then she came back with an Indiegogo because it really, what's crazy is that they keep their percentage and then give everyone else back their money. So you end up just making money for Kickstarter.
Right.
Wow.
And you don't get anything. Mm. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something that I remember. I saw an interview. I mean, Mike did an interview with a member of De La Soul on the podcast. But they did a Kickstarter for their album, and they were talking about like the what that would do to the momentum for the project if they didn't hit funding, and that so something like that might be.
Yeah. But of course, it's De La Soul, and that's not really an issue for them.
It's going to be a huge problem, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not going to make money.
Yeah. They hit it quick and kept going.
Yeah.
So. Cool. Well, I'm glad we definitely got that out of the way, and we can talk about it again. We'll make sure to hit it up at the end. But I want to get some more of your story. I think you've been around here in the Seattle scene for a while, and I think a lot of people don't really know that much about you still.
Right.
I mean, you came out with your
Music
second album,
C-Sharp,
last year, and that definitely kind of took you to another level, I think, from the first album, right? Gained a lot of notoriety for you and kind of put you in this new wave of the Seattle soul scene that's really kind of cooking. Besides that, even just us doing research to try to like find some more backstory and stuff, there's just not really a lot online.
I'm private.
So
I'm not.
We need to get that.
We need to get the
deets right now.
Okay, let's go. There's stuff out there to know.
Yeah. So where are you from?
Originally born in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
I grew up here, though.
Okay. Oh, so you came, when did you come here?
I was like six.
Okay.
Five or six. So, yeah.
Okay. So you're from here pretty much then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What area did you grow up in?
When we first moved, we moved right to the south, and my sister went to Sharpless.
Okay.
But I grew up in like Federal Way, Des Moines, high school out that way.
Okay.
Like that,
so you went to school out there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Federal Way or Decatur?
I went to Decatur.
Decatur, okay. You got to make that distinction when you're
from
Fed Way. So.
Right, it's been a long time.
Yeah. And how did you get into music?
I always sang. My sister has an amazing voice. And I was like, if you can do it, so can I.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're from the same people. Mm-hmm. So it's in there. And so I just would sing. People would say, stop it. All the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, make me. So it was in me, and it just wouldn't go away, but right out of high school, I signed with Hendrix Records here in Seattle.
Okay.
And I signed with the gospel group. The name of the group was Soul, And we toured quite a bit, and then they kicked me out of the group because I was writing R&B music as well.
Oh, and not gospel.
And not gospel. I mean, I wrote some for the project we
did, too.
But the producer of the project, who was a gentleman by the name of Derek Clark, amazing producer, probably, in my eyes, one of the dopest out of Washington State. So he kind of really taught me how to work my craft musically, how, you know, in the studio. He would take just enormous amounts of time with me, and then from there we would just write. I was going in every day, and so I learned a lot from him with that, working on that project. And then we placed a song on this little girl group called Treo back in the day. One of them got pregnant. Nothing ever happened.
They were from here, too?
No, they were from L.A.
Oh, they were from L.A., okay.
So it was when I did that that they were like, oh, hold up, you're really writing R&B music. You know, oh, you're straddling the fence. Get out.
Yeah.
But will you still write for us?
Right.
And I said, no. But it was that's kind of where I started. And then from there, there was a gentleman named Luke Jackson who knew me through the church scene a little bit. And he said, there's this cover band named Hit Explosion, and they're looking for a singer.
Right.
Would you be interested? And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But I was super green, just fresh out of church. Didn't know nothing but church, really.
This was like right after high school?
I was in the group for a few years, so I was about 22,
okay.
23, somewhere. I was young.
I still see Hit Explosion. They're still going.
They're still going.
Yeah, they're still doing it.
But, I mean, I was there during, like, their heyday. It was
excellent.
I mean, it's all I had to do.
So that was like, what, like late 90s, mid-90s?
2000. I was in there from 99 to 2003.
Okay, yeah. Tight. Yeah, I remember they were popping. Like all kinds of shows.
Didn't
the,
they do, wasn't the, we had a friend, and I remember his like bachelor party, we went to the Phoenix Underground. And it was the one, where the old location where like the Comedy Underground is now.
Mm-hmm.
Remember,
oh, okay.
Like in that, when it was still in like the square?
Yeah.
And I remember
where ADA Keys is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I swear Hit Explosion played there like on a regular club night. It was for the homie Nick Valley's like bachelor party, and we went there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away because it was just you guys, I mean, I don't know if you were part of the group at the time.
But the Phoenix was our home. I mean, like we were there often. I matter of fact just left Dean Zelikowski, who was booking for every cover band back then. He was just a legend.
That's right.
So, yeah, just finished.
So you rock with them, so that was like four years or so? 5 years?
Yeah, 4 years.
And just for people who don't know, so you would just cover hit songs, basically.
Yeah, 70s disco.
To 80s. I mean, you did
we didn't do any 80s. They had, I just forgot their name. There was another 80s. We did 70s. There was someone who did 80s. There was Beatniks.
And you guys wouldn't step on each other's toes. And
right.
He booked us all. We were all working so much. I mean,
yeah.
We were working so much. But, I mean, to be 23, 24 years old, and now you're making like
and then,
50,
oh, there was
60
the,
grand from just working on the weekends.
The Aphrodisiacs.
Aphrodisiacs, yes.
Yeah. I remember I used to work on the Spirit of Puget Sound, the dinner cruise boat. And I think two of the guys from the Aphrodisiacs used to play in like the band on the boat and stuff like that. So
yeah.
I knew that they were like another cover band. Anyway, sorry.
Nope. And we were all.
Yeah.
Wasn't no one at a lack of.
Right. Work.
Work. Not
yeah.
at all.
It was all kind of corporate gigs and different kinds of parties and right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was popping back then.
It was good.
Yeah. That's because all the retro stuff was all band stuff.
That's what they were called. The Retros or something like that. Or. Retro? Something. It was another band that
another
I actually
band.
Really enjoyed because they did all the 80s.
Oh, I see. So. Cool. So after that, what was the next step for you?
While singing with Hit Explosion, I took a couple of breaks. The first break I took, I left for about 4 or 5 months, and I went and stayed in Japan, and I sang there for a while.
Hmm.
That was awesome.
Where were you in Japan?
I was in Fukuoka, so it was 2 hours, I think, south of Tokyo. I'd actually never made it to Tokyo, but...
Really?
Mm-mm.
And how did you end up with that gig?
There's a gentleman here by the name of James Cowan. He was already over there, and he needed to come back and needed someone to take his place. And so... Even though I was singing with Hit, I was like, I'll go.
Yeah.
I'll go to Japan.
Right.
And so I went, and cushiest gig ever. I mean, like, all they wanted was, back then they had, remember those MD players? Do you remember those?
The mini disc?
Mini disc.
Yeah.
So everything they were like, just put it on a mini disc and let's just play it. So I invested a few a few hundred bucks into a bunch of tracks.
Yeah.
And that's all it was. They wanted a list of songs you'd sing. It was something like karaoke, but it was just me.
Oh, so it was just like all requests.
For the most part, like, I would just go unless someone said, yo, can we hear this song? And I would skip down the list
right,
or something.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, but you're American. That's all they wanted.
That's all they wanted.
Yeah.
English conversation.
Yeah.
English. Oh, yeah. And I would think they were going to actually talk back to me.
Right.
Because they say, can we have English conversation? I say, yeah. And then I learned, you just want to hear me talk.
They just want to hear you talk.
They're not really talking back.
That's funny. And so then after that, after you came back from Japan, then you worked with them
again?
I
went back to Hit Explosion.
Okay.
And that was like maybe 2002-ish, 2001, 2002. I'm kind of lost where I'm at. But then I went to Hong Kong in 2003.
Okay.
So
did a similar kind of gig.
Did a similar kind of gig. They kicked us out because SARS had just broke out like 2 days before we left.
Oh, no.
So it was a ghost town. And so they ended up saying, we're quarantining. Everyone has to get out.
Oh, damn.
So that was that. And then I came back and I actually got out of Hit Explosion.
Okay.
And I moved to L.A.
Okay. So I think, was this like your main kind of time that you were working down in L.A.?
2003 to 2007.
Okay. So can you talk about that a little bit? I heard some little telltale stories possibly about some stuff that went on here, but I heard that you were maybe like working with some big people. I don't know.
I did. I mean, I actually, you know what? I will say they say that, 7 years doing the same thing is like, if you make it in 7 years, that's overnight success.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, toot my horn a little bit. And within the first year and a half I got there, I had like 3 deals on the table as a songwriter.
Right.
And it was literally based off of just like 3 songs that I had written. And I ended up signing a deal with Chrysalis Records, who at the time had like Sting and Big Boy Outkast, Tweet, Jonte Austin, some other really cool people that I was like, I'd love to work with them. So I did that. They gave me, here's what's cool, is that prior to signing that deal, I went to see a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of my first times ever seeing a psychic.
Right.
And she said, you're going to sign a deal. She said, you have money coming, is what she said. She said, it's not a lot. And she actually gave me the number. It's about somewhere in here. And
it was right
that's
on.
What my deal was.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So wait, you were writing for Outkast?
No. No, I was just trying to get close.
You were just trying to like get song placements or what? Okay.
Yeah.
But you had an actual like a
publishing deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it was cool. I thought it was going to be cool. I probably could have taken that a little more serious. I really don't think of myself as someone who writes for other people.
Mm.
And so, I had people, they would come to me and ask, will you write for so-and-so? And I'd write stuff, and I couldn't tell you whatever happened to any of it. But, I ended up moving back to Seattle. They initially said, who do you want to work with? And, Heavy D on the behind the scenes, he was a really great producer, and I was hip to some of the stuff he was doing, and I was like, I want to work with Heavy D.
Right.
I want to work with Faith Evans. I want to work with, Jill Scott. I wanted to work with people that I felt like I could say something real through.
Right.
And they were like, cool, perfect. And then I signed the deal, and they said, will you work with the Cheetah Girls? And how about these Disney artists? And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go ahead and go on back to Seattle. I did it. I came out here, I did it. And,
So did any of the songs that you were writing at the time, did they get...
Not that I know of.
Nothing happened with them?
I did some work with Kashif, and I think some of the stuff may have placed international, but I never really followed up. Plus, I was like...
Like for his projects?
Yeah, do you know who Kashif is?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, yeah. I don't.
He's like a legendary 80s R&B
He wrote, like, You Give Good Love by Whitney, and he produced quite a bit of that.
Right, he started off as an R&B artist and then kind of became, like, the go-to, like, hit songwriter guy. So
he was one of the main guys I worked with when I was there.
Okay.
So...
That's cool. So did you work with, did you work with Dre on something?
I had a couple of sessions where I was just the writer. And I went in with a writer from here named Frankie Richards.
Mm.
She's amazing. And she left to L.A. and like never came back and has been doing her thing ever since.
Right.
And so when I moved down there, she kind of was like, I got you. And so she took me in to work with a lot of big cats. I mean... But the biggest, I think, was Dre.
Was Dr. Dre.
But a lot of them were, in Curve. He was on Dre's team, and so we did some stuff with him.
Okay. And so that was like, you said that was like, what, 2004 or something?
Yeah, that was around 2003, 2004.
Okay. So that was like, Yeah, so like after 50 Cent had come out, and probably like The Game was popping.
They were starting to, yeah, they were starting to hit there.
Truth Hurts era.
Yeah, she was one of the first artists I went and saw when I was in town. I was like, we're going to see Truth. And Tank opened. I think Raphael Sadiq was there. It was like, I like L.A.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm kicking it.
We doing big things.
Yeah. So they tried to hit you with the Cheetah Girls, and you were like, okay, I'm out.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I didn't want
to
do it.
I'm not even hip to what are the Cheetah Girls?
Cheetah Girls were a Disney...
Didn't it have like Raven?
It had Raven, Simone. Wait,
3LW.
No, it had the leftover girls from 3LW.
And Raven Simone, I think, right?
That's who, like, 3LW is who I thought of when you talked about, what, Treo? Trio.
Yeah.
That's what made me think. I totally thought of 3LW when you said that. Oh, and one of the girls got pregnant. And then
what it
same
was.
Kind of thing, right?
Same kind of thing.
Yeah. Three Little Women.
That's what.
Oh, yeah, I know, bro. You don't have to hit me to the 3LW. I'm hip to the slang, bro. I'm slang. Lit AF out here.
Okay. Lit AF.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay.
But
hey,
I did
that, that was a callback for everybody listening to the show. Yeah. That was a callback to something dumb joke Mike made before we started recording.
Yeah.
So. Just so you know, I'm funnier even than you think.
Okay.
All right.
What were you going to say?
No, I worked mostly with like some of the underdogs. You just be surprised at who is really a heavy hitter in the music business. Like, I don't remember the group Troop.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Hell yeah.
But that guy, the lead singer of Troop, his name is Steve Russell. I worked a lot with him.
Oh, cool.
I mean, he gets like, at that time, he was placing like 60 songs a year.
Damn.
Just stuff he wrote?
Just stuff he wrote.
Yeah, see? And yeah, and like you're saying, like, you don't even hear about that.
You don't hear.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't even know that he's.
And when you say placing, you mean like...
he writes songs and then, you know, Rihanna will...
Sing it
and make it a hit song, and then he gets publishing credit and money.
So when you say placing 60 songs, you're like placing on the charts?
Well, placing
on artists. So it might go on a record, and it might not be a single. But
or it might get shelved, too.
Yes. I mean,
it could, but they paid him
for
it.
But they paid him for it.
So you get paid for the song most of the time.
Yeah.
You get paid to, like, buy the song, like, a nominal fee for that, and then you get some kind of credits because there's, like, royalties and mechanical royalties and stuff for the writing and producing, so...
So
it's a good way to support yourself if you're good at it. That's what she's trying to get at. Yeah.
Right. And I, you know, strategically, I just didn't realize that this was a really great stepping stone into being a solo artist.
Right.
And I just, you know, because most of my career, I've been having to do it like pretty much by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I had a manager and a really good attorney help negotiate my deal, but. Once that was done, so were they.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have been doing it by myself. And if someone would have just said, Tiff, here is...
Right. You don't have to write songs for the Cheetah Girls forever.
Forever, but just do a few.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Because famously, like, you know, there's people like Neo, The Dream...
And he was just hit. Sia. Just signed a deal for $1 million.
The Dream, right?
When I was signing The Dream.
So they were all like...
Just songwriters.
And then they kind of like popped off their songwriting and like... Ended up becoming solo artists.
That's how that's how Billy Joel got started too.
Oh,
possibly so. I don't know his story.
He used to write a lot of songs, and then finally he was like, "Yeah, I want to be the piano man."
Yeah, worked out.
But I didn't know. I just was like, "I want to sing."
Yeah.
And so no one had said, "Here's how you
here's a good way
to do it." So I was in, and then I was like, "I'm out."
Yep. Yeah.
But it's a funny business, you know. I'm pretty straightforward, and so I couldn't really get with L.A.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was telling Mike one of the questions I was thinking of asking you was, I was curious, we interview a lot of we've had a lot of friends and a lot of MCs on here, and you don't really, like, have to ask, like, you know that they write their own stuff, but I was curious listening to your music and, you know, if you wrote all your own stuff, and it sounds like you did.
Yeah. Actually, on C Sharp, when I initially started recording that project, Anthony Warner is who kind of put us all together. You know, he had F2D and then Joe Doria and Brian Ray or Sting Shark and just all of our musical community that we all, you know, gigged together and ran together a little bit. And when he initially called me, he was like, "Yo, Tiff, let me slide you a little bit of money. Will you come in and just sing this song?" I honestly thought it was just going to be some background vocals. And then he slid, you know, "Here's the whole sheet. Oh, I'm doing the whole song."
Right.
Okay. So I recorded the first song and they had me come back a couple more times. And he was like, "Well, let's just do a record." And I was like, okay, and it was really new for me. I was like, I don't sing like funk music or soul, you know, this yeah. kind. When I think of soul music, right. I think Bobby Womack, a little yeah. bluesier. Right. And so I was like, I don't know if I can do this.
It was more funk.
It was more funk. Yeah. And so at the time, the horns weren't on there. So I was like, I don't even think I like it.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, and then John Reeser, he arranged the horns. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, I could get with this. But I think it threw my fan base off a little bit because it was a retro sound, which we chose because of what was going on in our world. So we right. said, you know, it's retro issues. We'll make some retro music for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a totally different feel from your other project,
mm-hmm.
which I would say is more just like, I guess, modern R&B is what you'd call it. I don't know.
Yeah, just R&B is that R&B first soul. One. But they were 6 years apart, so I honestly felt like right. I should have.
Well, when you came back from L.A., is that kind of when you started working on your first album, the Music Therapy?
All of that stuff on Music Therapy was just songs. Again, like they were like, yo, will you come write for Whitney mm-hmm. at one point? So easier said than done, I originally wrote for Whitney Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I was even asked to, you know, do some stuff for Aretha, and I wrote a song that didn't go on there, but, it didn't go on, but that's what I was doing, was just writing down there, and
right.
then when I came back, they were like, well, what did you do?
Yeah.
When are you going to put out a record?
Right.
And I was like, shit.
I guess I'm going to take some of these songs
right now.
I wrote.
So I just pulled them, and, you know, I caught a lot of flack for it. I mean, really surprising. You know, I think I'm a great vocalist and songwriter, and so I thought we had really great mixes just straight out of the studio, no extra anything on me, just me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, this is better in my mind, this is better than some of the stuff they, you know, yeah. having to pour all kinds of sugar on
overproduce
top.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I thought, I'm gonna just put it out. And I went to someone who worked for a radio station. His name was last name Buck, Matt Buck, Matthew Buck, I think. And he charged me I don't even want to say, because then they really going to talk shit.
Well, you don't have to put the amount out there.
But no, yeah. literally, this is how, and this is what it cost me, $33. He said, how many songs do you want on the record? I said, well, there's 11 songs we're going to put on there. And he said, I'll just get them to where your levels, you don't have to turn them up and down between each song, and I'll charge you $3 a song.
Oh, so that was like your master? Yeah, the $33 master.
The $33 master. Nice. And, you know, but to this day, people are still playing that record. And mm-hmm. I get all kinds of messages. Yo, man, I was driving, and then your record came on. And So they're still playing it. I think most times the consumer really doesn't have any clue.
So what were you saying that you caught flack for? Just because people were like, what are you doing? Why are you not putting more into the
production? Oh, you didn't master it. And I don't think...
Oh, I see.
I mean, maybe people's eyes or ears are really great, but I don't think most people knew it. But I said something.
Oh, I see.
And then it kind of circulated.
I see. And then they were like, oh, yeah, now we can tell.
You didn't master that.
Right.
You didn't know.
Yeah.
You didn't know. You was bombed.
I didn't know. I remember because I was telling you the other day when we were going back and forth about scheduling this stuff, and I was like, yeah, I used to rock that album a lot, and my wife too. We used to listen to that all the time. She had that CD in her car, and would just play it like all
it's
the time.
It's still in people's cars.
That, yeah, that Top of the Building, that was my jam.
Yes, it was mine too.
I didn't know what to do. First thing that comes to mind, loving you like crazy, my baby. How I felt when you were gone is crazy. Let's go get you. Top of the field. I wanna love you so much. So much for the feeling. Give me the love. Give me the feeling. Ain't nothing like your top of
the field. Yeah, I love that song.
And like I said, people are still playing it. I mean, someone said, someone just stole my copy.
Yeah.
6 years later.
Yeah.
You held on to it for a while, though. That's good.
Yeah. Considering no one uses CDs. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So.
Well, I've just been giving you pennies, streaming the fuck out of it lately, so. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'll take them. They add up, too.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
You'll get a check in, like, 5 years.
Pennies
for
from
10
Joe.
Bucks. 10
right.
bucks. Yeah.
But it still sells. I still see a little bit of money from there.
That's cool. And who did a lot of the production on that?
The most on there was a gentleman by the name... Well, it's pretty evenly spread. But let's see. Top of the Building was by a gentleman by the name of... Or two gentlemen, Mo Betta and Chris Scholar.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Scholar does a lot of stuff with like Q-Tip and a lot of East Coast. He's actually... Really, really super dope.
But he's from Seattle?
Nope.
Oh.
No one on the record is from Seattle.
Oh, so how did you...
I did it all in L.A.
Oh, that you recorded it all in L.A. too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. I thought you just had the songs, like, lyrically written, but you had the whole song, like, demoed out, basically.
Yeah, it was just music I had come back from L.A. with that, you know, didn't get picked up or didn't get placed.
I see. So you had, like, demo recorded them all and, like, mm-hmm. sung the vocals on them for people to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Is that the process that you, where you write, when you're writing music for an artist, that you make a demo to, for them?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
They want to
hear what it's going to sound like.
But, you know, I would always pour my whole heart into it.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, stop that. You know, you'd want to leave something for the artist you're selling it to to do.
Interesting.
And I would just pour Tiffany, because I wasn't thinking along the lines of me writing for anyone yet. Mm-hmm. I still didn't like doing that. So I'm just coming here and sing this song.
How I would sing
it. If you shop it, you shop it. Yeah. You know, but they were like, you got to leave something for them to do. So I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know how, though, necessarily, to not put everything that I was hearing into
it.
Right,
right. Okay.
Therefore, I came home with a lot of songs.
Right. Well, didn't get placed. I'm going to place it on my album.
Right, yeah.
That's cool.
So
what, did you tour at all with that album, or?
I wouldn't call it tour.
No,
you know,
just
I
did some shows here and there.
Yeah. And some people caught wind of it on the East Coast. I would pop in, you're here, will you sing to a track? And yeah, sure, but that was about as much as I was really... And I didn't know, again, how to put out a record.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if we were on Facebook yet. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know anything. I did one album release show.
Brand new.
At the Electric Tea Garden. It was packed.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
Hmm.
I didn't know what else to do after that. So...
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you either. I still don't know what to do.
Exactly. So we're just doing it. You know, I just love music. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And It's great when you can eat from your craft.
Yeah.
But if I never was able to eat, I would still be singing.
Yeah.
It won't let me go.
For sure.
So I've had surgery on the vocal cords.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
When was that?
This was in 2009.
Oh, so right after the first album mm-hmm. came out.
Right.
Okay. What did you have? Did you have some nodes or something?
I had a cyst.
Oh, okay.
And so I actually went in because I am sounding like I am now, mm-hmm. but this is just weather and stuff. But I had gone in because I would sing, like on a Wednesday night, we were doing lo-fi every Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sing Wednesday night and would be no voice until like Tuesday at midnight or something.
Right.
And then I'd go in and I'd sing my head off again. And I was like, something's going on. And they looked in and said, oh, good news, you have a cyst.
Mm-hmm.
I said, how is that good news? They said, because we can...
Take it out.
We can pluck that out really easy.
Nice.
So I was brand new.
You got lucky.
Did you notice a change after the cyst was removed, though?
Yeah, I actually didn't really like it because it made me like 12.
Mm.
It took away... You know, I like a little bit of rasp mm-hmm. and uh-huh. some grittiness, so it took all of that away.
Mm.
And I had to almost kind of relearn how to work with my voice.
Mm.
That's interesting.
So,
well, it's a muscle, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, I'm sorry to burn and blunts and stuff. Just
yeah.
Try to get extra raspy.
Get my little rasp back.
Yeah. Word. I think another thing that we kind of, I'm not sure about like when this all happened, but we noticed in doing some research that you did a lot of hooks, that you were kind of the go-to hook singer for a plethora of local G rappers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How did that happen?
I have no idea. No, I don't. They still call.
Really?
They do. They don't want to pay now, though. So. But I used to sing with this group when I first got out of the gospel group. I was with Hit Explosion. Mm-hmm. And then my friends were in this group called Urban Tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it started. I sang all the hooks mm-hmm. for Urban Tongue. And we thought we was doing big things. I mean, we were. We were actually really good. But, again, there's no one here in Seattle at the time to tell you how to really work the music business.
Right.
So that's where I got started with the hooks. And people just started asking.
Yeah. And so,
sorry. We had to, I mean, it was funny because, I said, it wasn't that much... You know, stuff about like your story and stuff. And so, but that was, you know, when we were looking on Apple Music and Spotify, we were like, oh, featuring Tiffany Wilson.
Yeah, Spotify does a really good job. They're like featuring you. And so that was like, they just had a plethora, like he said, of G's that got you on their hook.
You didn't play Bullet. Bullet was one. He was an MC out of Portland.
Okay.
But I actually kind of liked the stuff I did. I did a couple things with him.
Oh, dope.
I remember like.
Well, I saw you were on D Black had a, you know, mm-hmm. you did some stuff with him. I mean, so not all G's.
Oh, yeah. D Black was kind of G before, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This
Touch
was
the
his.
Stars, I think.
Touch the Stars, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bonus track. Does that.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't even listed.
Does that feel some kind of way that you're on a bonus track?
A little bit. Like you could have put me on.
You couldn't tell the name of the song.
Like I can't be track 7. Come on.
You know, it has been really funny here politically. I mean, like we all know each other,
right.
But I've been like, if Tiffany's on it, I'm not doing it.
Wow. Really?
Many times.
You've heard that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, if Tiffany's doing it, I won't do it. I've been kicked off of shows. Like, Face was on the flyer and everything. And then, what? Like, oh, if Tiffany's going to do it. Actually, let's pull Tiffany off. And it's like, gosh.
Wow. I wonder what that's about.
Hey, I don't know either.
Hateration.
You know?
Let's call back to
another Mary J. Callback.
In your dancery.
Yeah.
We talked. Hateration.
We said
in
something
dancery.
About holleration last week with Otiano.
He's blazing a trail.
Yeah, he's killing them right now.
Yeah,
he's got some. Have you heard his any of his new stuff?
You know, I recently saw him. Well, I saw him at Mataraca Festival,
right?
And I was really, I wanted to see more of him because I could only hear him. We were having a little meeting, and I was like, "Let me go see the guy."
Right.
And then I did a Under the Block. Event July 21st and 22nd. He was on the 22nd. I was on the 21st.
Okay.
So then I definitely made it out to see him then.
Right.
And that was my first time actually seeing him.
What's under the block?
Well, it was going on while the Capitol Hill block party was going on.
Okay, yeah.
Right there. So we were at Capitol Cider, so it was considered
right
under the block.
Oh, right by there. Right. Oh, because it's downstairs in Capitol Cider. Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, that's dope.
Yeah.
Cool. It was still part of the official thing?
No, because it's not it's not technically the fenced off area that's the actual CHBP.
But we were packed still.
Yeah, tight.
Yeah, good turnout.
Yeah, that's dope.
That's dope.
Okay, well, let's see what else you got here. Oh, the play that we found something about the play, right?
You guys do your homework.
Forgiving but not forgetting. Is that right?
Till death do us. Till death.
Well, that's the song is Forgiving but not Forgetting, but it was a song.
No, the song or the play was called. What was the play called?
Till death.
Till death.
Uh huh. Okay. Till death do us part or till death.
And what did you? What did you do?
It was like my debut, I guess. Acting.
Okay.
It was something like a little musical too. And so I don't know if you have to know who Kevin Fredericks is. He's on Instagram as Kev on Stage.
Oh yeah.
Super, super, super funny guy. And so him and his brother and like their best friend, so it was Jason, Kevin and Anthony were the three. They were called the playwright or something like that.
Yeah.
And they wrote a play and then they got like me and Jay Charles and Jennifer Newberry, Michelle Lang.
Right.
And we spent several months rehearsing a play and then.
And what's the storyline of the play? Is that a long
Mm-mm.
explanation?
Let me remember.
Okay. I see. Edit.
Something to do with marriage.
Okay. Well, were you singing too or just? Okay.
I played an older sister to the bride.
Okay.
And
Jennifer Newberry's older sister.
Sure. I think what was her role? Was she? I don't know.
But I was just clowning because I know she's very white.
Very Swedish.
Yes.
Yes, she was a sweet girl.
Yeah, no, I like her. She's cool.
Mm-hmm. She's doing big things.
She's doing big things in LA, right?
She's. I mean, yeah. She. I think she's like. In their pocket I was going to call it Hustle and Flow. What's the show with him in it? With them two people, same
thing. Oh, Empire.
Empire.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, is she on there?
She's written, I want to say, at least two songs that have been featured on that show.
Nice. Okay. So she's writing and doing her thing. Because she's performing, too.
I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen her post stuff about, like, I forgot what she has a new artist name. I can't remember what it is, but.
Swedish,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those shows that I just don't think I'm ever going to watch.
Me neither.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I tried, and I love Taraji and Terrence.
I love Terrence Howard.
But
he's amazing.
I don't watch it.
I tried a couple times, and I was like, this is actually really corny. I can't do it.
It's eating the world up.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
I feel like corny is eating the world up right now. I mean, everything from president on down, it's like corny is selling really hard right now.
It's going hard. In the paint. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, and I know people say like go viral, and it's like I really don't want to have to just make a fool of myself to do that though. Right, so
it's funny though because like there is stuff that I watch that I know like if I really took a critical eye, it's not really like super good. It's just really cool. Like for example, The Walking Dead is like a show I really like, but it's kind of just a soap opera with zombies in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It really kind of is.
Like, I don't know.
I don't watch TV.
You don't watch any TV?
I'm a Netflixer, so I might watch something on there every now and again, but I don't watch TV.
You don't watch TV. You binge TV. That's what you're saying.
But we have Netflix, and I have Hulu and Amazon.
Oh, you got them
all.
But
I don't watch much of anything. Okay. I'm more of a movie goer.
Oh, I see. You're not on any of those good Netflix series then, huh?
That's fine.
Actually, when you say binge, I binged a little bit today on this show called Gypsy.
Okay. Is that good? I was just checking it out the other day and seeing if I should watch it or not. Is it good?
I liked it. It was kind of background noise.
That's the one with Naomi Watts?
Yeah. It's interesting. It went off. Like, I fell asleep during it, woke back up, still watching, and then it went through all the, for the most part. And it went off, and I really don't know what happened, but every now and then I'd glimpse, and it was good.
Do you watch, do you like comedy at all? Comedy, like stand-up comedy?
Uh-huh.
Oh, because you should check the Hasan Minhaj stand-up special on Netflix.
Okay.
I know it's a super random call-out to that one, out of what we're talking about, but you know who he is? He's like one of the correspondents on The Daily Show.
Okay.
But he's a Muslim guy, and it's really good. Yeah, it's really dope.
The last one I seen was Dave Chappelle's.
Those are good, too.
Those are good.
I was going to throw my Netflix recommendation in there, too. It was funny. So, a slight callback to our TV conversation. So, I like movies, too, but I have small children, and I work a job that has mandatory overtime. So, that plus my little podcast experience, I don't have a lot of extra time, right? Mm-hmm. But we got, like, you know, I signed up for cable so I could watch football, and I got the free HBO. And so, so I just watched. I know this is really long.
It's the longest way around to get.
I know it is
free HBO. Okay,
so I got
HBO.
Yeah, yeah. So I watched Hidden Figures the other night.
It was
I just seen
good.
It, and I was like, "How do I know that girl? How do I know the?
Taraji?
How do I know the computer?" And Brooke was like, "Oh, she's from Empire." And I was like, "Oh, okay." but I never watched Empire, so anyway.
But you didn't know Taraji?
I don't know who she is.
I know she's from Hustle and Flow, and
she was in. I don't remember. I knew I recognized her from something.
Baby Boy.
She was in Hustle and Flow and Empire, so her and Terrence do a lot of work together.
That was their main two.
Yeah.
Okay, those are two. Mm. Okay, so you can just edit that whole
Karate Kid.
My whole soliloquy out. Okay. She was in Karate Kid. Oh, the new one.
She was the mom. She was Jaden's mom.
Mm-hmm.
She's been in everything.
Well, obviously she's familiar from all these things that I've seen.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Except for Empire, which I haven't seen.
Right.
But the best show on Netflix, Master of None.
Oh, that's pretty good, too.
So good.
You seen that?
Aziz Ansari.
Oh.
Man.
That's good, too.
The second season just came out, people were all tweeting and Facebooking and saying how good it was. And I was like, man, I wish I could go back and watch that because I love his work, you know. And so me and my wife just started going, and just, man, it's so funny. It's so good.
Yeah.
I can't recommend it highly enough. It's the best TV show I've
seen. They won multiple Emmys last night.
Really?
In fact, one of the one woman who plays like one of his best friends on the show, she's a black lesbian woman, and she is a writer on the show as well. Mm-hmm. And she won last night for like best writing for like this particular one episode. But it was like a first, obviously. For the writing, for like a black woman in writing.
Didn't they have some? Wasn't there some lots of controversy? Something so white last year. Emmy so white.
Oscar so white.
Oscar so white.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. They tried to do better this year.
But, okay, good for them.
Yeah, but I don't know how well it worked out.
But then they La La Land.
Yeah,
that was horrible.
Is La La Land? Is that that's a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the movie that they said won when really Moonlight, and they said the wrong movie.
Oh.
At the very end for like the, you know, movie of the year, best movie or whatever.
It was Moonlight.
It was actually Moonlight, but who was it, Warren Beatty or something?
Yeah, he said La La Land. And then he like tried to explain himself.
Yeah, he was like, I couldn't read it.
And
oh, was, gosh.
It was a little controversy. Anyway, we're super
Jay-Z wrote a song about it.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
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 Okay, well, let's not highlight how out of the loop I am.
It's tight. He talked about La La Land and he sampled Fuji La.
That's
from
right.
From the refugees?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Fugees?
The refugees. Yeah.
Ooh la la. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not going to murder it.
Gosh, I just forgot. I auditioned for Lauryn Hill.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Like as a backup singer?
Mm-hmm.
When was that?
This was when I was in L.A. And I thought she was one of the dopest people ever, but they said, well, I didn't know. When I got there and I was just kind of waiting. And then she said, are you Tiffany? And I said, yes. And so I initially stuck my hand out to shake her hand. So she shook my hand. And then she said, okay, we'll go over here and I'll be right back. And then her people walked up and said, hey, so when you see Lauryn, don't shake her hand. And don't call her Lauryn.
Oh.
Call her Miss Hill. And I said, okay, too late. I didn't already say, hey, Lauryn.
You did?
Yes, I didn't know. They should have
hey,
found
girl.
Me. For, that's exactly what I said. Hey.
Yeah.
And then
Lauryn,
then you didn't get the gig.
I auditioned and she's like, wow, you're really good. Can you come back tomorrow with two more people?
She didn't want you if you couldn't bring back two more people?
She wanted me to bring, and I brought back two, but we weren't people who sang together. You know,
What's more surprising to me is that she put your getting in based on other people that you were going to bring. Like,
right. So don't bring me this and don't bring me that.
Oh,
and come back tomorrow and bring two people. So I brought back two people and I had this.
They weren't the right people.
I had one of my homegirls and she was like, you know, I'm more like a, and I think Lauryn missed the word vocal. So I'm more like a stylist because she was really into the Parliament and, you know, P-Funk. And so Lauryn was like, what do you style? Like she was like, no, you know, like a vocal stylist. She was like,
girl.
All right, y'all, that hurt enough. She left. She literally said, okay, I've heard enough.
Yeah.
And left. And so, no, I didn't get. But her mom still calls me every now and again. It's probably been a couple years now.
Lauren's
her mom?
Mom
calls and says, can we take you out? Can you do dinner? Can you do whoop whoop? And it's like, no.
What?
I know, I'm silly,
oh, and
right?
I'm confused. How did you get cool with Lauren's mom?
Because I think her mom.
Wait, Mrs. Hill, not Miss Hill. You're talking about Mrs. Hill.
Yeah. Lauren's mom, yeah. I think because she must help her do some booking or okay. She's probably on her team somehow.
Okay. And so, you just charmed her up so much that she wants to take you out to dinner?
No, I never met her. She would just call and ask me, could I come out on the road with them? Can you sing? But she would want me to sing tenor. And at that time, I just didn't have that kind of range. I probably could do it now.
Oh, really?
But at that time, I couldn't. So I was like, I'm really a soprano, and maybe I can do some alto stuff.
Tenor's kind of low.
It was a little low for me.
Bro. Yeah, right.
So, but yeah, she's called at least 3-4 times saying, Tiff, can we get you to come out?
Really?
So I cool. really think I did impress Lauryn Hill, but right. She wanted people, she wanted
right
to bring
time.
Out a unit.
Probably for chemistry's sake, maybe that's right, right?
And she saw that there wasn't any.
She just wanted to like.
With us three.
Yeah. She just wanted you to bring the people so that you guys would already be cool and you wouldn't have to worry about.
Yes.
Okay, I see. I guess I could see that. I guess,
right.
Lauryn. I'll let that slide.
But
it still kind of sounds like a weird,
It's weird.
A weird scavenger hunt. Go find two people that you mesh with perfectly.
And bring them back.
Bring them back tomorrow.
And my roommate at the time is actually super dope. Her name is Toni Scruggs at that time. And so I would have gotten her, but she was already singing background for Chaka Khan. So it was like, I don't have anyone else to go to.
So did you do a lot of background singing?
No, I'm not good at it. I'm really not. And I think I just got clowned really hard at the Madaraka Festival because I sang background for the two headliners. And I suck. I just am not good at it.
Why?
I'm just not good. I don't know. Maybe a little ADD or something and holding my part, you
know.
Is it
because you're just a diva and you got to steal the limelight? Is that what it is?
No, I think it's just easiest to sing lead, you
right.
know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, I get it. You don't want to have to stand there and wait for your part the whole time because you get antsy.
No, literally, I struggle sometimes with just hearing my part, like.
Oh, I see.
Sing it again. Wait a minute, what is it? So, just
sure
to hold it sometimes.
Right, it's a different talent.
Totally.
Totally. Yeah. Like I said, my roommate, Toni, she sings background, like she just Instagrammed the other day of her singing background for Queen Latifah. This is what she knew she wanted to do when we lived together. She was like, I just want to sing background.
Oh, she didn't even want to do leads.
Mm-mm. And she's ridiculously amazing. So,
tight.
But she's, you know, Layla Hathaway, she sings with some real geniuses. And she just wants to sing background. Not anymore, I'm hoping now. She's like, I'll sing lead.
Okay. Cool.
But yeah.
All right.
That was my Lauryn Hill story.
Nice. I know. That's funny. I have a super, if I can just insert this real quick.
Yes.
I have a really quick Lauryn Hill story. Besides.
Just don't beat around the bush.
No, I'm not. Besides the time when I went to her concert at Showbox Soto and she was hella like 3 hours late and then it wasn't a very good show. Besides that.
They've been complaining.
Because I love Lauryn Hill and I was
too.
Like, she used Everybody. To be, I mean, she's still the tightest female MC to me, hands down.
No question. Damn.
Nobody has come tighter than
Fully
her.
Fully clothed.
For
too.
Sure. Yes.
Like, you still want to listen and she's wearing all her clothes.
Right. And she can blow and all that. So.
Yes.
But, yeah, randomly one time, I think it was like 2005, we went to Sweden for some clockwork stuff, and then we stopped in New York on the way back, and we were working in the studio with Frank, shout out to my guy Frank Handler, blast off, and we were in this random studio in New York, and like Lauryn was in there like checking out studios or something like that, and she came out of some room, and we were like going in, and we were all like, hey Lauryn, she was like, hey, what's up, y'all?
Yeah,
that was it.
She's really cool, but
and I was just like, hey, I met Lauryn Hill.
I thought she was really cool.
Anyway, that was not very interesting, but
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's I never met Lauryn Hill.
That's true.
Both you guys got that on me.
Yeah,
I met Black Thought and Red Robin.
Nice. I met him too.
Was he at Red Robin?
No.
Okay. I'm just saying.
I have to tell you.
I hella fanboyed out on Black Thought at Red Robin.
Tight.
Yeah, it was tight.
Someone called him Black Thunkit.
What?
Black
and he was like, no, that's not it. Like,
oh,
they
like
thought
they
were being funny.
Oh, they were making
and
a
we
joke.
We were all standing there, and she was like, oh, we should call you Black Thunkit. And he was like,
no, definitely not.
No, ma'am.
What's fucked up is he's probably like, he's probably heard of many variations of that joke.
I mean, probably something like it too. I mean, I chuckled a little bit, but
he was
I don't
not
think he found it funny. It's like, I thought it was kind of funny.
What's that? Get the F out of here.
Pretty much.
All right, well, let's talk about your latest project.
C-Sharp. Hashtag C-Sharp.
Yeah, I mean, so your first album, Music Therapy, was definitely, like Joe said, it was pretty much like R&B, mm-hmm. right? Contemporary R&B. But you definitely went in a different direction with this C-Sharp project.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't like I thought, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You know,
we talked about, I guess, briefly that how you kind of connected with
Anthony Warner.
Yeah.
F2D.
And so you did a couple, right, Funky to Death. And so you.
And I was just fans of F2D, you know, and I liked the music. I just didn't know what I was going to do to it. You know, like, I don't know how to do this. But what was most important to me was just to stretch myself. You know, I don't think there's anything that I can't do. It's just a matter of doing it. Now I love performing the record. You know, we put our own little nuances in it and to make it do what it do. But it took me a second. I mean, like, literally, I honestly thought, oh, they're going to drop the ball on this record. We're not really going to put this out. Like, sure, you know, we're working on it, but no one's going to put this record out.
Right.
And so I will be honest and say that I was, like, probably a little half-hearted because I didn't know how to sing funk music, you know, and I just really wasn't being able to get into it. So, and then he said, yo, we mastered it. And I was like, he sent me the master and I had it for like 2 months and never listened to it.
What?
I was that like, I don't like me doing this. And then he was like, so what's up? Let's put this record out. So I thought I better listen to it. And then I thought, no way. We have to go back in. So I know he was like, this
yeah, I just
like, we just mastered
paid to master,
this.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I'm
probably
sorry.
More than $33.
Way more. And so I went back in and I added some things that I felt could just bring it up a little bit. And then my good friend Troy Intellect, he's a really great engineer and artist, and he put ears on it and he mastered it for me, you know, and got it to a sound. He remastered it. And that's the master we went with.
Right.
But, you know, I wanted to keep it simple, you know, as, you know, I didn't want it to be run heavy. And really what we just wanted was to address some of the issues that are taking place. And we started writing it when Trayvon was murdered.
Okay.
And then we just kind of kept going.
It took some time, though, because, like for example, you put out a couple songs, like, a whole year ahead of the time of the album that came out, like, on a single.
Which I didn't, well, that's Anthony Warner. So I didn't do that. I didn't.
Okay.
He put it on a red vinyl and released it. The first couple songs. And at that time, like, I still was like,
not ready.
It wasn't my sound just yet. And so wasn't quite ready. But as we go on now, I really do enjoy playing it. And it did get me a totally different audience, though.
For sure.
Which I didn't really have. You know, like, I was funny the other day because I'm in this campaign. I was looking through all of my friends, you know, and I was like, I don't have very many white friends in here. I mean, I have a lot. There's 5,000 friends, but I felt like the people who gravitated towards me and my music were definitely people of color. And so now with this other record coming out, it's introduced me to.
I mean, it's got to be like.
So the funk introduced you to your white friends?
Yeah.
Ain't that something?
Yeah. But this is real, though, right?
That's real.
I mean, that R&B niche is like a different, it's just a different audience.
Right.
Yeah.
And they want to dance, and they loving the horns, and they sweating and swinging.
Right.
You know, and they come out to have a really good time.
Yeah.
And so I do want to make sure with this next project that I can capture both audiences.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think it was cool because, first off, whoever did the mix, and you said your guy, Troy, did the master.
He mastered, but Floyd.
The mix is nasty. Like, that was like one of the first things that I noticed. I was like, oh, the mix on this is hella good. Like, that's good.
I'm just kidding.
No.
It was my first time actually really sitting right
it's
there.
It's really
saying,
good. Like, all the instruments, like, you hear them really nice and clean, but you can tell that like the recording techniques and the style of everything is very like stripped down and, you know, kind of like got that retro, you know,
that's
going for like a real clean kind of sound, mm-hmm. but without like overproducing and adding too much effects and stuff. And then the vocals all like cut through really good. And that's,
thank you.
That's a big deal. So
yeah, I'm
most people don't, really, you know, notice that kind of stuff, but.
And I didn't with the first record.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, this sounds good. But I like also that there are some moments in certain songs that I hear that it's not. There's like techniques that are newer techniques mm-hmm. kind of being blended in like the retro feel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I like that. That was cool. I think, yeah, Eyes Closed is definitely
one of my favorites.
Too. Yeah, I really like that one. I feel like that song specifically is kind of more of a blend of like a newer R&B mixed with the mm-hmm. with the throwback sound.
You see, baby, please know that I love you with all my heart. But sometimes I find it hard to let my love. There seems to be a disconnect between what you do and what you expect from me. Expect me only to hear and not have eyes to see. Oh, you want me to fall for your regular rhythm of roll.
I enjoyed recording all of those. We recorded at Litzo.
Okay.
And I worked with Funk Love, like on, we did two, I think, songs. The Justice was initially his, and I just said, can I have it, please?
Mm.
So we put that on my record, and then he did some backgrounds and stuff with me on American Dreams.
Tight.
And the Justice flows right into Me and You. It's like almost mm-hmm. two parts of the same song.
Right. You know. We actually just recorded a Me and You part two. That's now it comes back more to it. I have a couple of hip hop artists on it. A gentleman by the name of DL,
mm-hmm.
who is just insane to me. Just an amazing writer.
Okay.
And another gentleman by the name of Harvey Garvey.
Mm.
And it's again.
Are they from here?
They're from here.
Okay.
And again, it's still just dealing with some of the social justice stuff. And, you know, someone said, don't Nina Simone yourself by doing too much of that,
mm-hmm.
Well, what's relevant to right now.
Right.
But what I find about Nina Simone is we're still listening to her.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
yet again, her music is relevant. And it actually never left.
Right.
You know, only she did, because they said all of a sudden her stuff wasn't relevant. And,
yeah.
you know, but her music has remained relevant.
Yeah.
Since she made it.
And inspired future generations. I mean,
yeah.
like think about what her music, you know, translates into hip hop and
mm-hmm.
yeah,
and
right.
all
the sampling,
and inspiration
yeah.
she's
yeah.
provided for that.
Yeah, and she's definitely like one of the most respected, like,
right?
You know,
of all time.
Of all time.
Yeah.
So
right.
I don't think that's really an issue.
Isn't it crazy?
If you
want to
be in that
like,
camp,
don't Nina Simone.
Yeah. yeah.
Please
let me
we
Nina
still
Simone
talk
myself.
About Nina. So, but yeah, that's where I'm at right now. I absolutely I am affected by, you know, I have nephews and brothers and I'm black and
yeah.
I have my own experience with the police, you know, and
mm-hmm.
so it is something that I definitely don't want to encourage people that we just party through
yeah.
this whole crap we're dealing with, you know,
right,
like
right, right.
by, you know, yeah, we can have a good time and we should not be moping around and, but we should definitely be somewhat inspired to, really fortify ourselves as humanity and unity and stick together, you know. Committed to making music that is addressing the issue, but I think what's most important is that we just get a new dialogue and a new narrative to our youth. I mean, I believe when you're nodding your head yes, you're affirming whatever it is you're listening to. Mm. You tell your body it's good, you tell. And so we're nodding our heads to pull your panties to the side, and it's like, no, let's not, Chris. You know what I'm saying? I love you, Chris. I really, do. But let's not. And we have our children listening to it. Yeah. So I, you know, with this next project, I just want to make music that will allow them to affirm something positive, affirm some strength, affirm some self-love. You know,
that's for sure.
And I was going to say there are other artists addressing this stuff.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm getting old and I'm kind of out of the loop as well in a lot of ways. And like, so what's hip? And so I hear it from hip hop, but I don't hear artists in other genres besides just like some quote unquote conscious rappers who are talking about this stuff. So I think it's really cool and to hear these issues brought up in music, you know, in other, you know, in R&B and funk and just in, you know, and telling the story.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough people that are, you know, really like brave enough to take that on. And, you know, partly because they feel like it might not be as commercial. And so that's a fear.
Yeah, they don't want to Nina Simone themselves.
Yeah, they don't want to. And in all honesty, like, I'll tell you, I mean, like with my own situation, like when, you can write for faith and blah, 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 blah. How about these Cheetah Girls? It was immediately like, dumb it down. No, let's keep it really.
Yeah.
And so that's when, I mean, like, if I genuinely believe in myself that I could probably pop back down in L.A. for a few years and fire things back up. I still have a lot of the same friends and connections. Mm-hmm. I don't I like the independence of being able to say whatever I want.
Yeah.
Without you telling me that's not mainstream and that's not radio. And, it's okay.
Well, there are a lot of avenues, and like you were talking about with the crowdfunding, there's a huge independent market out there for real conscious content where you can say some real shit and not have to worry about like the Disneyfication of your music, you know, to make it like friendly to. But I also feel you as like a parent with kids, and I like to listen to music with my kids. There's a lot of music that. Like maybe my younger self used to like vibe to, but as a grown up, it's like it's just a little too ignorant for me to really, and especially to listen. Like I don't even vibe to it as much, just because I feel like I've matured beyond it. And then also I'm like, I really don't want to play that around my children.
Right.
And
well, especially
true.
Coming from stuff from our youth, which back in like '90s hip hop, there was a lot of.
I listened to a lot of really like, gangster rap.
It's just too much.
Brother Lynch, it's EBK every day.
Yeah, we listen to that all the time.
Oh,
yeah,
that was everybody's.
Some Brother Lynch.
Come on,
hell yeah, Lynch for sure. Yeah,
and actually, that's some shit. I gotta tell you, that was some shit. Like, I gotta hit my teenager To Lynch? Oh, man. Let me tell you. It was...
I don't think I can do that. Yeah. Everybody killed him.
It blew his mind. And he was. I was like...
Oh, you did it already?
Yes.
Oh, you showed him?
He was
what
like,
song? Rest in Piss?
Oh, yeah. I played him... Yeah,
the whole records, all of them.
Oh, yeah. I played him. Yeah. I played him that. I played him...
Season of the Sickness.
Yeah, I just played the whole Season of the Sickness for him. Yeah. And, like, him and his homie, and, like, just... They were just, like, agape. Just like...
What the hell is this?
Fucking... And I was like, it's wrong. It's wrong, but it's really good, right? And they were like, yeah, and yeah. That was dope.
Yes.
But I think that's the age for it, because
that's the time you can appreciate that. Once you get older, like
that's the age I was when I discovered Lynch. Right. I was like 16,
right.
And that was he was new then, but
yeah,
dating myself, yeah. But still, okay. But it's dope to have music that I can play for my younger children. I have a 5 and almost 6 and almost 3 year old, and it's dope to have like good music.
You're a little baby boomer, ain't you? Yeah. Popping them out. Well, yeah. She's popping them
out. Not anymore.
You're popping a little something too, though, don't you? Wow.
We're all dead.
4 babies.
No, 3.
Oh, 3.
3 yeah. Boys.
Oh, okay. I thought you said 4 different numbers there.
I did. Both their birthdays are coming up. I'm getting confusing. This is really like. confusing our podcast listeners, but
they're trying to keep up with all your kids.
I have a 5 and a 2-year-old, but they're like their birthdays are coming up, so it's like almost 6, almost 3.
Oh, okay.
That's what I said.
Okay,
I threw too many numbers up there.
Yeah, oh. We both got.
I'm rambling around the same age.
Do
so.
You?
Yeah,
I don't have any children. I'm an auntie.
There you go.
I'm a very devoted auntie.
That's the easy way to do it. You can always give them back.
They don't want to go back though.
They want to hang out.
They want to stay.
Auntie Tiff.
Actually, let me just tell you, I cried. It was the first time that I called over and said, hey, do you guys want to come over? And they're all like, no. They are teenagers.
They're
now. My niece
now.
Just turned 15. My nephew just turned 13. And the youngest is 9. Now, he wanted to come. Yes, let's go to auntie's house.
Yeah.
But the older two were like,
we're good.
We don't want to go. Mm. We want to do whatever teenagers do. And it was like, so I said, okay, bye. It's okay. And then I called my sister back. And I was literally in tears. Like,
yeah.
My babies are grown. Aww. They don't want to come hang out with me. I just cried.
Yeah. They wanted to stay home and sit on their phones.
They did. That's exactly what they wanted to do.
What they do. That's what they all do.
That's what they wanted to do. I was heartbroken.
I did get to hit my 5-year-old to he had my wife's iPad and he just found YouTube video of some guy playing guitar. It was like some indie rock. It was pretty good, and it had some like dancing skeleton like marionettes in it. And he was like, "Oh, you gotta see this, Dad!" Mm-hmm. And it was like these dancing skeletons. He thought it was really cool, and so I was like, "Let me show you something." So I put on the extended version of Thriller, mm-hmm. which like think about it, I was about 5 when Thriller came out, mm-hmm. probably like, and I remember like around there.
Yeah,
what was it like? 8?
Yeah, it was 5. Yeah, it was
83.
Yeah.
So, he was like a little scared at first because it's kind of like a little mini horror flick, mm-hmm. and he was nervous. But then it came out and the zombies started dancing. And for some reason, my 5-year-old, he doesn't call them zombies; he calls them yambies. It was
look at the yambies.
He was like, "Look at the yambies shaking their butt." That was so funny. He thought it was the coolest thing ever. It was great.
Michael Jackson wins them over.
Yeah, every time. Ever,
for sure. what was I talking about again? Who was our guest? Oh, yeah.
Okay, Tiffany Wilson. Yeah. I'm telling my stories about me.
That's okay.
That's okay. I like stories.
Yeah. One thing we definitely were noticing, and especially once we saw your video, was that our guy and former guest of the show, Jimmy James, was a major contributor to the C-Sharp project, right?
Boom. He pretty much...
He could hit guitar on most of the
songs. It's all very guitar heavy. And
yeah, I didn't even know. I'm sorry to cut you off. You were going to tell us something.
That's okay.
I hit him up today because I was listening to it, and I was just like, man, I was like, that sounds like Jimmy playing. And so I texted him. I was like, is this you playing all over the C sharp? And he was just like, yep. And he hit me up. We talked for a little bit. But he was telling me his favorite song, and I got to kind of agree, was the... was the song that was pretty much just you and him.
Ain't No Use.
Which is a really, really stripped
really
down,
dope.
Like, beautiful song.
It was, we were sitting in the kitchen at Litho, and Anthony Warner said something like, y'all should make a song about a bucket of holes. And I was like, a bucket of holes? Loving you is like a bucket of holes. Hmm. and I pour, but out it flows. So we were just sitting there in Jimmy James, and then we went in and we recorded it, I mean, like right then. And he was like, I don't think we should add anything else to it. And so I said, perfect, we won't then.
Every day I love you more and more, but don't know what I do it for. Keep hearing your name out in the streets. I'm not the game you're playing for keeps. I'm not the game you're playing for keeps. Oh, loving you is like a bucket of hope in a pot, but out it flows. Loving you with all my heart.
Turn out nice.
I think so too, although because there is nothing else to it, sometimes it feels like it drags on forever when you're performing it.
Yeah.
So I've told him a couple times, like, let's just cut it. He said, let's just do the whole thing. Let's just do the first verse and two choruses and stop. And he was like, every time. So we just played together on Saturday. I was really surprised that he didn't say, let's do that song.
Oh, you didn't do it?
He didn't.
Where'd you guys play at?
Sea Monster.
Okay.
That's like our home.
That's the home base for all those, yeah. True Loves and Funky to Death. Yeah.
It's a great space. And Andrew has, you know, really made us all feel very welcome and taken care of and things like that. And so.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we really barely touched on it. But, yeah, so you're part of this kind of like, what would you call it? The soul movement that's kind of going on.
Musical family out here, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of bubbling. It's been going pretty well in the last couple of years here in Seattle, and it's cool, man. It's cool to see this.
And I wouldn't have thought that I would have landed like anywhere near this lane.
Right.
So I was just glad that they were like, "Yo, can we work with you?" And I'm like, "Yeah,
yeah,
you can. I would like to work with you guys too."
I think your voice fits really well on the style. So it's funny that you're so like unsure about it. But
oh, I'm telling you, I had that record for 60 days.
That's funny.
And was like, I'm not listening to this. But you know, I come home now and my wife is playing it. It's blasting throughout the neighborhood. Yeah. It's like, and I like it now. So
that's cool.
And so that is the direction you want to go with your new project, is what you're thinking.
Yeah, not necessarily. So.
All the way.
You know, but little, you know, maybe just move in a little more. I really, you know, I'm waiting for like another 15, 20 years, and then I'm probably going to switch again and just go all blues. I'm from the South. I'm from, you know, my dad's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
So the blues is what really jives with
moves
me.
Moves, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Until, you know, I felt like I can do that with my,
right. you know, later years.
Glass of whiskey, you ain't hardly got to sing, you
right,
know.
Right. Then you have all kinds of rasp on going on there.
Yes. So, but yeah, it's growing on me, and I definitely do love performing it. So
nice. Well, I hope so. I mean, it seems like you've been getting a lot of love for it, so that's dope.
It's starting to catch on a little bit. So
is it just starting?
It feels like it.
Really? I felt like it kind of like got a lot of people talking when it first came out last year. I don't know.
They didn't talk to me.
Oh. Well, you did.
We sold out the triple.
We only just met, so.
Right. Well, and I think people were really anticipating a new record. They didn't know what they were going to get. So we sold out the triple door, and it was a great show. Everyone loved it. But I think they were like, oh.
This is what this is?
Yeah, they didn't know what they were getting from me.
Yeah. But, I mean, like you did the KEXP thing, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people checked that out.
Yeah, some did. A lot of people did.
Probably.
Yeah. What's cool about playing KEXP is that, like, you literally have an international audience.
Immediately.
Sure. Yeah.
It's they have, like, a million.
Because a lot of people just tune in from all around the world just because KEXP plays new, cool shit.
Right, and it's super curated, so, like, people trust that it's going to be dope stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had lots of good. You know, I won't say it got lots and lots of, it might be maybe close to 9 or 10,000 views or something. What I find, you know, is a lot of those people already have really extensive fan bases. And so it has 30,000 views in 14 hours. Yeah. And I was like, shit.
Right.
So, but other than that, I'm looking forward to the next project. And what we'll most likely do is I'm working closely with a few different producers that will develop music that a band can recreate in the studio.
Okay.
And so we'll start writing it, and then we'll, you know, rehearse really well and then go in and knock out.
Get Jimmy James
in a few days.
Get Jimmy James in there.
If he's still around at that time, Jimmy might be off,
yeah,
you know, to the
thing.
Stratosphere.
Yeah,
he's doing his thing.
For sure.
Yeah. Who are the producers you're working with?
Right now, I have a couple more from the East Coast mainly, though.
Okay.
I still have made a lot of good connections, and so I do kind of want a little bit of a hip hop edge, and so I worked a lot with the producer coalition, is what they're called, but they Spida from Spider-Man and Freeze. He did Poison.
Yeah.
He did Color Me Bad.
Spider-Man and Freeze in full effect.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I worked with them, and Mello did Put Your Hands Where My Eyes Can See. So those are, you know, my East Coast cats that I keep kind of working with. I actually just recorded a song that I'm thinking we might go ahead and switch to a live band with Scott Storch. And so,
tight. So
it's actually a really great
Scott
song.
Storch made a beat, and you did a song over it.
Mm-hmm.
But then now you might redo it with the live band.
Because I don't know if I can afford the track. They hit me up and they say, can you write? So Scott Storch is trying to make a comeback, and so his people reached out and said, yo, will you write to some of his music? And so that's what I did, and I really actually like some of the stuff I did. And I'm just hoping that he was like, yeah, it's cool, go ahead and take it. If he says that, then we own.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if not, then, you know, I will probably do some sort of recreation of it so that I can let him have his track back.
Right, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Dang, I want to hear that now.
I'll let you hear it.
All right.
Exclusive.
It'll be exclusive. I don't think.
Exclusive to our ears.
Yeah, I don't think we can, unfortunately, put snippets of that one in because it's Scott Storch. But
yeah,
that's cool. Okay. Well, what else? What else is going on? Anything else?
Right now, I eat, sleep, and breathe this Indiegogo campaign. And I'm not a campaign.
Yeah.
Manager, and so it's a very vulnerable experience where, mm-hmm. you know you need it, and you're just hoping that people believe in you enough to try to help you get it, you know. But bottom line, whatever we raise, you know, we'll be like Jesus with them five fish and them two loaves of bread. We gonna stretch it out.
Yeah.
So that's the only, you know, that's it.
So with the tour that you're planning, are you just basically going to be planning touring with what your existing material?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not, but the plan is to take this money and create new material.
New material. So what we did was I launched the campaign. It's to raise $100,000. Pretty much like between 20 and 30 of it will have to go to the tour. But what we are finding now is that, you know, we can probably stay in some people's homes. We're not having to pay for all of the hotels and every, you know. And right now we were doing a really big tour. Well, not really big, but 20 days, which...
That's a lot of days.
You know, so...
But you should get some money back from the touring, right?
I mean, when you see what these people want to pay you, it's nothing. And that's why we decided to raise the money, because we'll be starving. And I actually, last year in December... I did a show at Lo-Fi, and there was a group that was supposed to be coming up to open for me, and they were coming up from California, and they were touring, I think they're from Spain, and they ran out of money and had to just end the tour, had to cancel the rest of their gigs. So that's when I said, oh man, as a new artist, they're not giving you a lot of money. So, I mean, some of these gigs, I mean, like one of them, just one, was like, we'll give you $150 in drinks and food. And
for the band?
For the band.
Oh, hell no.
And I said, sure, because do it. I mean, we're hoping to raise the money first, so we don't want to rely on
that. That way you guys can just pig out that night.
Right. And get shit-faced.
get a doggy bag.
Right.
And you'll have breakfast.
Give us all the food. But, you know, they don't... That's the business. The artists, I feel, are the most exploited.
An opening slot for some other...
Possibly.
Okay.
And I'm not certain who they're pairing me with yet. There's just so much to do. And like I said, there are me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
And I have someone that's helping book the tour.
Okay.
My bass player, Ruscotti X, he's now taking on some of that stuff. And then my guitar player, you know, Sting Shark, he's now helping to get the sub agenda together, radio and blah, blah, blah. And then anything that you see written, descriptive, I write everything.
Okay.
And so... we're really just trying to make it happen the best we can. And
so you don't have a manager or a booking agent or anything like that?
Well, there's an agent that's booking this tour, but I don't have one regularly, and I've already paid him, so I had to pay him in advance to book, you know, this tour for me. And and he hit me up saying, "Yo, I hear, and I could probably get you." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I would love it. Can we do it?" And he was like, "Yeah, they'll take you. I've already done some stuff in there, so they want me to come, but I'm still an artist that no one knows." And they look online and see, like, yeah, bring her out.
But they're putting you on the right kind of shows, like with the right kind of artist that fits what you're doing, or what? Hopefully.
Yes. Yes. I've looked. I was looking today because we just put on San Francisco. It's a brick and mortar music hall down in San Francisco. And so I got to looking, like, where are these other places? We're in Reno. We're in Sacramento. And so I was just looking at the venues to make sure. And there's a couple in maybe, like, Oregon that I'm like, I hope we make it out alive.
Some back we're in Oregon.
Yeah, there's one in Brookings and
where's that?
Right. And when you look on there, it was like, are they gonna want me there? But
I think that's a good thing about the, like we said, about this album.
Mm-hmm.
The appeal, I think, is very
diverse,
right?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, the vibe of the music. It's
and
like,
they'll dance.
Not many people can be like, oh, this is not good.
Not
I mean,
good, right?
You know, I think most people, even people that like rock music, mm-hmm. country, like this has got that kind of funk vibe.
Right.
Brings a lot of people in, I think.
Yeah, and they do. They really, like, we did Out to Lunch the other week, and they were up dancing. They enjoyed it, nice. You know. And, you know, people were stopping because it's right in the middle of the city, and so people really enjoyed it. As a matter of fact, I think I just got a couple gigs from that. Like, people hit me up saying, "Yo, we heard that you, can you come and do this?" And what's great is, like, right now I'm really on my whole unity and activism and things like that. So both of the people who asked were like, we peeped the lyrics and you would fit. So I was like, yay.
Yeah.
Someone listened to the words.
That's what I'm saying. That's good.
So.
Yeah, we need more of that, man.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I'm cool too, you know. So I'll write some good stuff, you know, that allows folks to talk a little shit and you know, or make a baby or two. But
right.
For the most part, I just want to make some, you know, healthy music so that I can turn it on for my niece and nephews.
Yeah,
and, you know, they get something good from it. So
that's dope. Word. Well, I think that's a good place to kind of wrap it up.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else you wanted to shout out real quick, Joe?
No. Shout out to MC8, though. Gia.
I'm from Memphis. You know what I'm saying? 8-Ball, MJG, So
one more time, let's make sure and shout out the Indiegogo. It's
Hit the Road TIFF. Indiegogo. Right. All the slashes.
/. Hit the Road TIFF.
Hit the Road TIFF.
Okay.
And, of course, TiffanyWilsonMusic.com.
Right.
And then you can follow me on Instagram, Tiffany Wilson Music, and on Facebook, Tiffany Wilson and One Tiff Wilson, I think. Something like that.
Okay.
I'm out there. Website is probably the best way to go.
Okay. Yeah, follow up, guys.
Cool.
And and support.
Definitely. I am your Seattle Soul Ambassador.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Because I felt like there could be more than one. And, you know, I go into, like, Z Monster, and he's like, the queen. And it's like, there's a few of us, though, out here. So I don't want to, I'm not here to be the one.
Take that title.
I just want to be one of many of us who are out here, you know, pushing Seattle soul music forward. So yeah, I was just, it came out like when we were shooting the video for the Indiegogo, it was just like, I'm your Seattle soul ambassador. And they were like, you should stick with that. And I was like, oh, so it was really a mistake, sort of.
Oh,
I couldn't
see.
Think of what to say. I was
I see.
I'm your Seattle soul ambassador.
Oh, so you just, that's just a self-imposed title.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, but he had told me, do you want a teleprompter for when you shoot the video? And I was like, nah.
Yeah.
I got it. Right. I got it all right up here. It was so hard. It was so hard. He was like, do you want a teleprompter next time?
Yeah. Probably.
Yes.
Probably a good idea.
Actually, you know, I wanted to call back something and ask you a question. Mm-hmm. What's up with the title C-sharp and where does that come from?
Ah, right. Cause I'm always told to say that. Well, we had a double entendre. C-sharp means seeing clearer than
because it's hashtag S-E-E, S-H-A-R-P. Okay.
So it was definitely about seeing clearly. I felt like we were so blinded by what we were facing with this hatred and stuff. And for me, I feel like it's really not about who hates us. Most everything is projected. So I feel like when that hate is out there, it's most likely something they're dealing with from the inside. Mm-hmm. I say all the time, we can't love anyone else more than we love ourselves. I can't give you something I don't have. And so I feel like more than we're combating hatred, we probably should have a little pity and teach some of these people how to love themselves. Mm. Because then...
That's real talk, but it's
tough. And when you're constantly getting from the TV, pump some shit into your lips and buy some booty,
right.
It's like, golly, I thought I was okay until I turned on the TV.
Right.
And then C sharp is actually the ohm. And so it's the resonating tone of the earth. Mm. So with Om, you bring things back into balance, back into alignment. It aids in self-healing. It heals the planet, So that's what we were going for. I wanted to make music that aided in healing what the hell is going on out here.
That's dope. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, that's really dope. I didn't know C-sharp was the Om.
Yeah.
That's tight.
432 megahertz.
Mm. There you go.
Om.
Yeah.
I wonder what that looks like in a wave.
wave.
I remember listening to I can't remember which, I think it was one of the last couple Erykah Badu albums, and she was talking about the frequencies. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how the frequency of like love. Mm-hmm. and how it's a deep, how it's a big wave.
Mm.
And then hate, it's like it's really sharp and tiny and small waves. And it just got me interested. It got me thinking. Erykah Badu is always teaching me
She's
stuff.
Dope.
For sure.
Yeah, she blows me away. And so, as do you,
Thank
I should say.
You.
Yeah. So, but anyway, it's interesting when you talked about the frequency of Om.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder what that wave looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I bet it's a big ass wave.
Right.
Because that's the frequency of the earth. Mm-hmm. And that shit's huge.
That's so, tight.
And we get religion, and I think we should definitely just meditate, and be quiet sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Actually, one thing that I remember listening to, it was, I can't remember the title of the song.
He's
but
not
it,
from Sick Lake. Nothing from Sick Lake.
No.
No more hooks.
shout out to the Sick Lake.
Yeah, shout out.
I don't think that's going to make the podcast any of that, so don't worry about it. but shout out to those guys. It was where you talk about how we come from love, but love doesn't. What was the lyric?
In which song we come from?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm trying to see. I'm trying to look at my phone and look at my notes because I fucked up on this part. But it was about where we come from love, but love doesn't. How can you say we come from love?
Oh, how can we be made in the image of love and there ain't no love for us?
Yeah, the very first time I heard you say that, I thought the first refrain was how can we be made in the image of God if love doesn't come from us? And then each time after that you said love, and I was like, I wonder when she's going to go back and say God again.
Well, love is God.
But God is love, and that's what I was thinking of. And I was like, I'm feeling her vibe with the whole thing. But then the next time I listened to it, I was like, she never said God. She just said love, and I just heard God. Mm-hmm. So,
God is love. That's what we grew up learning. And love is God.
Yeah.
More than anything that's... that's it. So how can we be made in... if we're all made in God's image.
Right, in the image of love, right?
We should be looking like love, all the time. But some of us are...
Not
struggling to get some love.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's just my piece on religion, is that I think any religion that is divisive and not talking about unity and bringing us together and loving each other, that's not the righteous way. So
at all. I actually kind of stopped going to church I don't really go to church. Yes. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't like the people in it, mm-hmm. but there is a lot of judgment.
Yeah.
I had someone on Facebook, I was saying something, you're saying that because you're married to a woman, and it's like, love is love.
Yeah.
If but for some reason, you guys think it's something else, in the church there.
Well, I've been to church, and my parents go to church. I've never been like a very faithful. I don't just go to church very much. But
my parents were ministers, so
you were in there. Mad churchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I definitely have like many of my friends and many people I know who have a belief in a higher power but don't necessarily subscribe to a particular religion or a sect. And I kind of I see a lot of truth in a lot of different religions.
Right. Well, it's a man-made construct, and the thing about it is that the principles, I think, are some are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really great, actually, you know. Love your neighbor as yourself, mm-hmm. which is what we're struggling with. Apparently, you don't love self.
Yeah.
And so that's really what the issue is. And there are some really great principles in there, but I feel like some of them get twisted to benefit the church and not the people.
All day.
And so... and they,
like Joel Osteen, who was like sending out the collection plate when he for hurricane victims.
And he,
do you hear about that?
He wouldn't let him in.
Do you hear about that dude?
I heard about him. Well, only from Kevin Fredericks. Kevin Fredericks did a skit, and he was saying, "I got shooters." You know, like you know, if y'all keep talking about me, you know. But yeah, he was. I didn't really know the back story of it. So he took up an offering for
Well, basically, first he was he was publicly shamed on social media because he had a huge one of these mega churches. It was basically he took a stadium and turned it into a church, and then shut the doors during
that. Said that he wasn't going to allow any people that were displaced from their homes or whatever.
And then was shamed on social media, and then finally started letting him in. And then he had some reason why. He was like, "Oh, I couldn't let you in because there was water or something, like, you know, some bullshit, because his shit was dry as fuck." Yeah. And then he let him in, and I didn't watch the video, but I guess from what I gleaned on social media was that he had a big sermon with his church filled with victims of this hurricane, and he passed the collection plate.
Are you kidding?
What?
That's what
I didn't even hear that.
That's,
oh my gosh!
So anyway, they get it really, really confused about that whole tenth, giving a tenth.
Not even going to that.
Right,
that's like a whole nother podcast.
But yeah, so I don't really subscribe too much, but I absolutely love the Creator, and I believe we are all connected to that, and that's just really the focus.
Well, I guess to wrap it up, what I was saying was that I picked that up from your music, and I really appreciated that sentiment. And so, and I appreciate your music, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
For sure. Yeah.
Thank you so very much for having me.
Definitely.
We're glad this is love.
Glad to have you on. Finally, like I said, we've been talking about it for a long time.
Timing is everything.
Yeah, it is. It just kind of worked out, and hopefully we can, you know, get this out real quick and help you get a last little push on your campaign.
Yes. The campaign actually ends in 18 days.
Okay.
So we've only raised 4% of the goal.
Okay.
No big deal. Yeah. I like the number 4.
Let's get it then. Let's go.
But yeah.
It can only go up from here.
It can only go up. Ain't nobody asking for a refund.
Right.
So, but yeah, and then, but it's ongoing. And I think the one thing I would like to suggest is, of course, we did this first part through the Indiegogo platform. They take 8%. So, if you really wish to donate, you can also do so just on my website.
Okay. Cool. You have like a Patreon or something?
It's just my store that's
on
there.
Okay. So there's a donation section on your store. Dope.
So.
Cool.
But thank you very much for allowing me to say that and use your platform to promote a few things. I appreciate it.
Yeah. We're all about trying to help out the people that we think are dope in the scene, especially, you know, here in the town. So, yeah.
Thank you.
We do it.
Artist for artist.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Okay. Well,
see you down, baby.
Yeah. For the biggest.
I'm
Miguel Rockwell. Hawkins Bird.
That's me.
Yeah. Where can people reach us?
I believe at The Biggest on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Is the biggest podcast.
Yeah, I get confused.
Yeah, come on. Okay, so people can...
You do
You can holler at The Biggest Podcast on Instagram, at The Biggest Pod on Twitter, and The Biggest Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to hear any of our episodes, you can go to www.thebiggestpodcast.com. Check all of our stuff on there. It has all the social links on there. So really, you should just go there. It's what we're basically saying.
And you know, when I listen back to our shows to like judge myself and like critique, you know, the stupid comments I make, I always listen on just iTunes because it's hella easy on my phone.
Yeah.
And you know what would be really tight is if like somebody who listened to our show like went on there and like ranked us on iTunes and like gave us a review. That'd
be key. Yeah. If you like the show, I've heard a couple homies, you know, hit me up every once in a while and say, "Hey, I've checked out your show," and I think that's dope. Because I don't really know. We don't know who listens and who doesn't.
Right.
So I know a lot of our closest friends have never heard one of our episodes. And that's cool or whatever.
Yeah, but, we'll run a name list off at the end of the year.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. But definitely people that I see every once in a while that I haven't seen in a long time are like, "Oh, yeah, I checked your show." Like, tight. Man, I appreciate it so much. So yeah, if you're feeling it, if you're a supporter, if you're a listener, go on, you know, iTunes or Google Play, however you listen to podcasts,
and rate it.
You know,
give it that 5-star. If you're not going to give it a 5-star,
or just give it a review in general and just say, yo, this is tight shit. If you're trying to find out about Seattle music,
yeah. But again, like, don't give me a 4-star review. If you're gonna review it, give me the 5-star.
Right.
Otherwise, just don't even bother.
Right.
And I'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Okay. It's podcast.
No,
we're keeping it real.
All right.
Yeah, got to.
All right. All right. Miguel Rockwell, Hawkinsburg.
Yeah.
Tiffany Wilson.
Yeah.
We out.
See ya.
It's the biggest.